Welcome to Skills of the Future, a podcast by Perennial Talent. In this mini-series, we explore the cybersecurity skills and competencies needed to face the new realities of work.
My name is Christine Lamott, and I'm the president of Perennial Talent. And my guest today is Will LaSalle. He is the Chief Information Officer and co-founder of JLS Technology. His company is a top 50 global managed security service provider. Will is an innovative information technology executive with an MBA and 20 years of successful experience, leading global teams in managing, deploying, and securing multi-million dollar IT asset for global enterprise. Will has a proven track record of successful portfolio management, organization building, and leadership ability in different areas, including information security, systems, development, e-commerce, enterprise architecture, enterprise infrastructure, cloud computing, disaster recovery, risk management, digital transformation, and strategic planning. Will holds an MBA from Aspen University, a master's certificate from Columbia University, and numerous certification. We are so happy and honored to have you on our podcast, Will. How are you surviving this pandemic?
Well, thank you, Christine. It's an honor to be on the show. Thanks for having me. Surviving this pandemic, you know, I'm out here. I'm based in Orlando. I moved not even a year ago. So it's great for me, the kids, and most IT big IT events, right? InfoSec World, Microsoft Ignite, Gartner Symposium, and it's very it's eerie almost, right? To see where you have Disney and Universal shut down, and you have a lot of these events. HIMSS is another big event that I think it alternates between Orlando and Vegas, which was shut down, right? So it's really crippled the local economy here. Mm-hmm. But from my perspective, to be able to network with peers and attend these events and speak at some of these events, that's part of the reason we fell in love with Orlando in the first place, is traveling to Gartner every year with the wife and kids. So they really loved it. And from my perspective, it's like, hey, you know, I can attend maximum amount of shows and events here to network with peers, see where the industry and trends are between here and Vegas. I pretty much can hit, you know, 8, 9, 10 of the really big conferences a year. So it's weird to have them all canceled. Most of them have been moving to this same kind of virtual platform, which is unique and presents, you know, its own unique challenges. But like everyone else, you know, even being an introvert, I'm starting to get that cabin fever. So
I get it. Yes, we're suffering from the same thing here. How has the world of work changed, Will? Like, what has the impact been of more employees working remotely?
Yeah, so, you know, that's a great and an interesting question, right? It's great because I've seen numbers thrown out, a lot of numbers thrown out over the past few weeks. And I've seen, in speaking with people, right, and just staying in tune with my network and with the news out there. So I've seen anywhere from pre-COVID, 4 to 5% of the workforce was remote, right? To now, in the present state, it's 80 to 85% remote. So the challenges that it's presented from what I've been seeing is, so if I take two approaches, I take an approach from cybersecurity and us being a cybersecurity firm, it presents challenges in terms of now you have more attack points, right? Now you have to a lot of my friends and a lot of people in the industry, in cybersecurity are pulling, you know, 10, 12, 16 hour days, 6, 7 days a week to be able to secure now people's home and personal assets that are accessing the network. Right. And thwarting that from a bad actor and a bad guy perspective, right. You're sitting there, you've got to be licking your chops, right. Because now all of a sudden, dormant, ransomware or dormant Trojans and that were on people's home networks and home computers, you know, are are coming online, and now there might be a treasure trove of information because that person is accessing a network insecurely. You know, you get a lot of the stuff where Zoom, the proliferation of Zoom, and with that newfound attacks like Zoom bombings, right? You know, and things of that nature, right? Then from a talent perspective, acquisition, retention perspective, what I'm seeing and hearing from people is wow, people understand now, man, I used to be stuck in traffic for an hour, hour and a half each way every day. I'm so much more productive. This is the life for me now, right? Mm-hmm. I don't want to go back. I love being home, seeing my kids more. I've primarily worked remote with the exception of traveling to clients. So whenever I'm working on stuff, being able to work remotely from home. Mm-hmm. So for years, decades even. So I've known that kind of data as far as productivity increases and stuff like that. So what I'm seeing in that space is just I'm going to see a lot of movement when things pick up, I think. And I'm going to see, I see organizations already just being very progressive in terms of how they're recruiting and positioning themselves for talent. Mm-hmm. So those are the biggest changes, which is huge, right? And normally you think of disruption, you think of technology, right? You think that, oh, wow, mm-hmm. Facebook, you know, is essentially a media company without any media generation of its own. You know, Airbnb is a hospitality company without any, you know what I'm saying, assets of its own, right? Utilizing mm-hmm. and that kind of disruption, right? Uber and Lyft with mm-hmm. with the taxi industries. So now you're seeing the biggest disruption is coming from this COVID crisis and what post-COVID is going to look like. So mm-hmm. it's exciting, scary at the same time mm-hmm. To see that, but I really see a lot of change. And for me, it's interesting and exciting, actually.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting in Canada today. The biggest company with the most asset used to be RBC, our biggest number yeah. one bank. And today it's Shopify.
Wow.
So how the world has changed, you know, in looking yeah. at it from that. From a startup company just a few years ago. And they have yeah. just blossomed through COVID.
Yeah.
You know.
Yep.
What roles are becoming more important in cybersecurity that you're seeing with what we're living right now with the pandemic?
No, that's a great one too, right? What I'm seeing right now is we've always had this shortfall, right? Mm-hmm. Depending on who you ask, between 2 and 3 million, right, globally in terms yeah. of, right? And effectively kind of unemployment was 0%. Mm-hmm. We know now there's been a lot of companies and everything, but I'll give you a great example. I have a buddy of mine through this pandemic, mm-hmm. buddy of mine who had a security role that is heavy in the food industry, right? So with that, with the big restaurants aren't open, right? Even mm-hmm. even food packing, right? Mm-hmm. The plants, they can't process because they employ all that stuff and how it's taken a big hit, probably one of the biggest, if mm-hmm. not the biggest hit. So his job, he was furloughed. He was able to find a job in less than 9 days in this climate. He was able to find a job in wow. less than 9 days and find a great job as a, you know, deputy CISO for an organization, right? And you mm-hmm. sit there and you see that in certain industries, they really are hiring. You said it yourself, like Shopify, mm-hmm. in certain industries, they are taking on so much explosive growth, right? Mm-hmm. Amazon, with so many people with getting remote or connectivity, remote mm-hmm. desktops, virtual desktops and stuff like that. Microsoft with the same thing, but also with Microsoft Teams, mm-hmm. you know, Slack, Zoom, yeah. you know, and other channels. So what right now, what I'm seeing is a big push for like all positions within cybersecurity, right? Mm-hmm. But more so, let's say some of the strategic ones, right? Mm-hmm. So some deputy CISO, CISO roles, right?
Yeah.
So come in, help us, right? We've neglected yeah. this long enough. We've always had it on our wish list. It's no longer a wish list. It's a need right now, a requirement. Mm-hmm. We got to have people work remotely and secure those assets. Mm-hmm. And then down to the lower level, right? Even into SOC analysts, right? Because now what you have is, like I said earlier, so many different attack points. So now you're ingesting more and more logs. So what I see, that's what I see. And also from a standpoint of startups, you know, and I've advised a few startups that are utilizing tools like AI, mm-hmm. machine learning, RPA, mm-hmm. to kind of make it where, and that's why I said that number is 2 million to 3 million, to kind of make it where it's closer to 2 million, right? Because they can sit there and automate a lot of the jobs and get the concentrated kind of alerts and triggers that are necessary for somebody to actually mm-hmm. take action on, right? As opposed mm-hmm. to somebody looking at every log. But, you know, that's the byproduct that I'm seeing and hearing and speaking mm-hmm. and staying in tune with the cybersecurity specifically in that industry.
So a good segue to that is, what type of skills or competency do you feel are most important right now, you know, for cyber industry? And what's the industry doing to find and develop these skills right now?
No, that's a great one, right? So from a hard, like mm-hmm. technical skills, right? Definitely from the entry level perspective, it's the competencies to be able to understand the SIEMs, right? Understand incident response, mm-hmm. Understand event management, right? Those from a technical skill mm-hmm. set. From a soft skill set, which I feel is right now because of the current, mm-hmm. because you have a lot of people that are going to call and say, how do I work my Zoom, right? Yeah. How do I work Teams,
yeah.
right? And they can be everything from a lower level, right, importance employee to an executive, right? And in most organizations, executives had white glove, right? They called and said anything, they'd mm-hmm. have a technician in their office, right, mm-hmm. dedicated. So now it's the same kid gloves, right, the same white glove service, but it has to be done virtually, right? Yeah. So you need to have them skill sets where you need to be able to express yourself on a virtual platform, right, or over the phone even, mm-hmm. To the highest degree of customer service. So I think that customer service it's always been to me a critical skill, right? Yeah. Because me being an executive, right, I never get a phone call when, you know, very rarely I get a phone call when somebody's doing an exceptional job. If somebody's mm-hmm. doing an okay job, or if they've done their job or even gone yeah. above and beyond, yeah. very rarely. But if somebody screws up or somebody has a bad yeah. attitude, there's a lot of times I get a phone call and no matter how good the person is technically, I got to intervene in some kind of way up to and maybe even, you know, moving the person off that account mm-hmm. or moving the person out of the organization, mm-hmm. all because of a soft skill, right? They could be the best, you know, DevSecOps person yeah. on the planet. And I'm going to have to sit here and say, okay, I got to put baby in the corner, right? I got to put you in the corner now for the next year because, you know, you done pissed this guy off.
That's right.
Having that kind of, and I guess that falls into a competency of like emotional quotient, right? Mm-hmm. EQ, mm-hmm. you know, which I think is also, you know, a competency that really we have to measure, look into, and build, mm-hmm. not only. Now, mm-hmm. now the second part of your question was in terms of training and stuff like that for that.
Yeah.
I feel that going back to how there's a big shortfall, and we also have, because of the pandemic, we have so many displaced workers. Mm-hmm. You know, I've done some work with some organizations pre-COVID that mm-hmm. have had grant money allocated to them for reskilling of talent mm-hmm. into cybersecurity skills, mm-hmm. right? So they're working on a range, they're learning entry level skills, soft skills, they're learning up to like a certification, if we want to put a stamp on it, up to mm-hmm. a security plus level. And also they're learning SIEMs, so they're learning Splunk. So now they can go out there and get and receive their certification and job placement assistance, right? So they're a yeah. displaced worker in a factory, and now mm-hmm. they have core foundational cybersecurity skills to go get one of those cybersecurity jobs and even mm-hmm. job placement assistance, right, to help them and start that second career, right? Mm-hmm. I think what we need is more and more of that, right? More of those kind of institutions, because what I see is there's that gap. Let's fill that gap with qualified, hungry people that mm-hmm. are sitting there and saying, hey, I'm a sponge. I will ingest you teach me and I mm-hmm. want to do good. And I truly believe I'm always an optimist, you know, mm-hmm. That truly believes in the good of people and that people want to do well and people mm-hmm. want to provide for their families. So I think if we can provide that, if colleges can offer certificates and everything like that, listen, you know, very early on in my career, mm-hmm. you know, I went through a grant program that gave me my first, before my degree, mm-hmm. My network engineering certification, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And I went through the program and everything like that, got that stuff, was able to get my initial MCSE way back NT4 days. Mm-hmm. And that helped me land that proverbial first job in IT that you know, springboard my career in IT, right? So I think, mm-hmm. and what I'm seeing and hearing is that a lot of these are in place and are going to receive more funding to be able to do mm-hmm. that. And a lot of them are getting put together, including one or two that I'm advising as well mm-hmm. within that space.
It's interesting because here in Canada for our veterans, there mm-hmm. is a grant to help them transform into a second career after they leave the military. And I think it's about $25,000 per veteran. And mm-hmm. One of our partners, Willis College, has put a program, a cybersecurity analyst, just for the beautiful. Veterans. And it's been quite successful in terms yep. of launching people who had no previous background in technology per se, but had some great transferable skills yes. where they're problem yes. solvers, you know, they're, mm-hmm. They have a willingness, like you said, to learn. They're a sponge, like I'm ready for a new career. And you could see that opportunity for people who are being, like you said, displaced right now, who could start a new career that pays a lot more than maybe what they're making in yeah. retail and a lot more interesting because you're people helping people, really. I don't view it as technology. I have a problem here. Help yeah. me, you know, try to solve it, you know, try to find it. Yeah,
that's spot on. And it's yeah. it's very fulfilling work when you think about it, too. I work on those things a lot behind the scenes. I've been yeah. asked to be an instructor yeah. in some cases. And it's just difficult from a time perspective to be able to kind of dedicate that and say every mm-hmm. Monday, Wednesday and Friday from this to this, I'm teaching a class when yeah. sometimes some other client, you know, all hell breaks loose and I can't pull away from that at all and have to push every meeting back. Mm-hmm. But whenever I do get to just be a fly on the wall, so to speak, or sit there, I get great joy from it to see, like mm-hmm. like what you were just describing, right? To see and hear them mm-hmm. chatter amongst each other, talk to you after the class, and the excitement around it, right? They have mm-hmm. those transferable skills, and you're giving them a chance. You're giving them an opportunity to not only that, but have a career, and this is me being biased, a career that the sky's the limit, right?
Exactly.
So they can sit there and fall in love with it. And I've helped yep. and mentored people throughout. I have a great person mm-hmm. that was when I was in the casino industry and was a surveillance tech, right? Mm-hmm. So babysitting cameras and everything like that, right? Making yeah. sure people yeah. aren't counting cards yeah. or putting yeah. chips in there, whatever they do, right? Yeah. Fighting, stealing, yeah. you know what I'm saying? And they changed and now they're just a superstar. I mean, I have conversations with him then and it was me bestowing knowledge upon him. And now I have conversations with him and the thought process, the stuff that he comes up with and he says, it's just phenomenal. And deep down inside, it brings me so much joy to see yeah. how great he's doing, how great mm-hmm. he's thinking and how all I did was just sit there and say, hey man, you can do this, right? And aww. Ignite that little fire in his
that's
belly.
That's right. You were the pilot it. Light. Yeah.
That's it. And yeah. that to me just is great. But I think that you have a lot of people right now mm-hmm. displaced in the world. And I think that that's a ripe opportunity for them. Mm-hmm. And it's the right thing to do. So let's fill these gaps with these people that have been displaced. Mm-hmm. So we don't have that 2 million shortfall. 2 to 3 million person shortfall anymore. Mm-hmm.
You're right. So having said that, what do you think are some of the main challenges, you know, being faced by the industry right now with respect to cybersecurity skills development?
Great question. And I'm going to take a little bit to answer this one, not long-winded, but
okay.
I have a bachelor's, a master's, and I have a master's certificate. And along the way, you know, my professors and some of them who I'm still friends with who try to talk me into getting my PhD, right, and getting a little bit into academia. And I'm just like, man, I don't want that student loan debt. So that I don't want any more student loan debt. But when I have conversations with them, you know, the education system moved away from like technology and cybersecurity. There was a gap in there for years. Mm-hmm. So not that many institutions of higher learning had cybersecurity and even technology programs. Mm-hmm. So right now what I think is they're moving towards it, right? But just like they're scrambling, there wasn't a farm system to create professionals that can sit out there and pay it forward. So I think right now what you got is everybody's acknowledging it. Everybody is this, but it's sort of you got a shortfall in talent of CISOs. You got a lot of regulations coming out saying you need to have a CISO caliber person. There's only so many CISOs out there, right? So, and CISO level, and we have to develop them and develop them quickly. So when you talk about developing instructors to sit there and be able to instruct, so each one teach one type. So the struggle I see is they want to, and I think what we need to do is more distance kind of learning, more computer-based learning and curriculum that really can help people. But if we're retraining people that have never touched cybersecurity, don't understand it, and they got to come from a core principle, there has to be a way, even virtually, that we do shoulder surfing to be able to teach them the core foundation. So I think that's the biggest challenge that I see. Like I said, I get approached all the time to go out there and be able to teach, and I mentor a lot of people. You know, I have some people displaced that I mentor from Disney out here in Orlando, right? That not necessarily they're displaced from a job, because Disney is huge and Disney has cybersecurity roles, so they're trying to change and get their second career. But even myself, I mentor like 5-6 people. I don't have the bandwidth to mentor anymore as much as I would like to, right? Or teach a course. So that's what I see, right? And whenever I do speak with these mentees, they're very appreciative of my time, just as I was when people mentored me on my come up. But that's what I see, right? I mean, in certain instances, business, accounting, marketing, right? A lot of those core principles don't change, right? So you can have 40 or 50 years of range of people that can, you know, give people knowledge, right? Mm-hmm. That can mentee or teach courses, great. But in cybersecurity, we probably got 20, 25 years at most. I mean, me myself being an OG in it, I'm still relatively young in terms of I have 20 years in it, right? And that's still going back to I was doing the stuff in high school. And, you know, still there's not many people out there that have 30, 35, 40 years experience. So you got to get that kind of talent, you know what I'm saying, there to be able to teach the people that have absolutely no knowledge.
That's an interesting point, you know, looking at that, to be able to pass that on and to build on that foundation. You're right. There's not that many it's a relatively, IT's not new, but in terms of what you're looking at teaching to acquire those cybersecurity skills, what are the future threats or pain points that could impact, you know, your industry? What could go wrong if these threats or pain points, you know, are not addressed?
So that's a great one, right? So before COVID, right, there was a lot of times I would be asked that question and I would say, you got 5G coming, you got IoT, right? So now, and the reason I would say that is now everything's becoming a connected device, right? Your car, your refrigerator, right? Your lawnmower, maybe. You know what I'm saying? Everything's becoming a connected device. So that means anything can be attacked, right? Health equipment, right? Implantable cardio defibrillators or whatever like that, that are monitored, telehealth. So, so that was one of the biggest things that I say, wow, the proliferation of connected devices, Internet of Things, and 5G, how just, right, a device can just connect to the 5G network and get faster speeds than, you know, a lot of places in the United States are getting right now with utilizing internet, right? Landline or traditional internet. So that's what I see, and I still see that, right? I still think that's going to happen. But now you're going to compound that with, like we talked about earlier, with people bringing, so now when you had a hub and spoke type network, right, where it was corporate or data centers or cloud introduced to that, now you're introducing, so if you're drawing a network diagram, it's so-and-so's house, so-and-so's house, so-and-so, Starbucks, this, that. So now you're sitting there like, you know, and this is when I'm talking to CISOs and other ones that I'm telling them, and they, you know, the bags under their eyes, like mine and everything like that, they're losing sleep because now it's just so much of an attack surface, right? That how do you juggle all that and not drop things, right?
Scary. That's very scary.
And it presents challenges because then when you start thinking strategically from a financial perspective, how are you going to pay for all that stuff now, right? In organizations that maybe are operating at 20% capacity and revenue of they were pre-COVID. So these are the challenges because now all of a sudden, you know, I have a friend, they spun up 500 virtual desktops on AWS the first week to support remote employees, right? Where did that money come from? Was it in the budget? You had to rob Peter somewhere to pay Paul.
That's right. Right.
So these are the strategic decisions. And again, bad guys are smart, right? So the bad actors, they understand this. They understand that, right? So it's sort of like in this confusion and everything like that, now you can turn around and really, you know, coming through the back door, so to speak, right? Yeah. Or while everybody's distracted, you can come over here. So at the same time that they're spinning all this up, making security, you know, just like we're trying to, the whole world is trying to find a vaccine for this and push it through and kind of cut corners of red tape, you know, you got people the same thing. Hey, man, you know, I have another buddy of mine that I talk to, and 1 week he's setting up people remote. The next week they're coming back on site. The next week he's setting them back up remote, right? Because, oh, are we going to lift the lockdown? Are we not going to lift the lockdown?
Yeah.
You know,
and
then people having to self-quarantine for whatever reason. Oh, I thought I was exposed to it, so I got to stay home for 2 weeks or I have a fever now. Mm-hmm. And then that as well, right? I got people in the casino industries that are trying to reopen up that are telling me, you know, they're going to have PPE. They're going to have social distancing measures. You hear about airlines now offering the middle seat for free or an upgrade for it to be free, free of a person to so you can have that space. So it's interesting to see all that and how that factors in, you know, including you have record numbers of people applying for unemployment for systems that can't handle it, right? That need to be upgraded, that need to be pushed through quickly because we want to get money into these people's hands. And as you know, if you push things quickly, right, that kind of quality and security hardening is lacking. So we've heard incidents of, you know, personal identifiable data from people and organizations being leaked because we're trying to do everything so quickly to help people that security probably wasn't at the top or things slipped through the cracks.
So mitigation of these threats become really critical. So what are they doing? What do you know what they're doing with respect to helping mitigate against a lot of these pain points and threats that they're living right now?
So, yeah, so trying to mitigate. So a lot of the people already have their kind of SOPs, their standard operating procedures and protocols. So they're trying to go through that, but it It really ends up being kind of like, and I'm butchering this old joke with Microsoft, where they would say quality assurance for Microsoft would be SP2, right? Or SP1 rather, right? Yeah. So, which would mean not many people would roll out technology for Microsoft back in the day until they were on SP1, which means Service Pack 1, which worked out all the kinks. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And I was a victim of that many times as well back in the day. So right now what people are doing is they don't want to, you know, they don't want to impede the progress, and they don't want to impede, you know, they don't want to be the bad guy to say, let's slow down on that system. Mm-hmm. Right? But meanwhile, you have a million people waiting for unemployment benefits. Right. So instead, let's push that system out. Right. But there's a lot of windows where they're sitting there kind of taking an agile approach to sit there and do the QA or do the security hardening right after the fact. Yeah. So it's sort of, you're throwing it out there and you're crossing your fingers, which is, you know, what is it? Something in pray, right? So, but at the same time, they're trying to catch up with it. And again, this is, this is what they're doing. This is to try to help mitigate it. Mm-hmm. It's not good news for the bad guy. I mean, it's not good news for us, it's good news for the bad guys though, right? Because now they're sitting there saying, okay, let me try here, let me attack there. But it's only so much that they can do, right? And it really, it needs resources like everything else, right? And with those resources, it's kind of, it ties to everything we've been talking about. It's not only financial, but it's also people. And that's why you have a lot of, like I said, my peers and friends in cybersecurity right now doing these long hours and barely getting any sleep. You know, so we, it's the bright side is, like I was saying earlier, you know, once we can tap into, I believe, a great pool of people, train them and be able to plug those holes in and come out stronger afterwards. So I see the positivity in it, but that's the approach that a lot of people are taking right now, Christine.
So I see cybersecurity workers as essential workers, very critical in terms of the warriors you need to be able to protect. Now, people working from home to organization, I mean, there's a lot at risk. And we're seeing a lot more of these threats, as you say, in Canada as well. And, but you're right, people are run ragged. I mean, there's just so many people, and trying to get new people on board, and where do you get them? And I know in Canada as well, as in the States, we're trying to get more women involved in cybersecurity, and trying to do that through education at a young age, from primary school to high school, and encouraging more and more women to pursue this field. But it's it's been an obstacle getting, I find, a lot of women you know, in cybersecurity. So that would be a good place to tap in right there, you know?
And I think,
in terms,
you know,
of shortage.
Speaking of that, right. I think you can now definitely take advantage of that in terms of being able to get that diversity, being able to get women involved. Right. As a girl dad, right. Like that hashtag that was out there, you know, I really feel getting them involved in STEM early and everything like that can build that kind of love and passion for it. But there's been just so much in society that has made it to kind of prevent that and prevent not only in cybersecurity, but in technology, right? These fights for equal pay that, to me, should not be fights, because it should just be equal, right? It should just happen. And I'm not trying to make it political or anything. There's there's organizations that I'm a member of that I volunteered for. So I'm a member of SIM, Society of Information Management, and they have a great women in technology program. And you know, I've supported that heavily. I'm a member of International Consortium of Minority Cybersecurity Professionals, which not only is working towards diversity with minorities, but also women, right? Because they are underrepresented. And I see a lot of great, great, great people in those programs and great, great people that are supporting them, great women technologists and cybersecurity specialists mm-hmm. in those programs. And I truly believe, same thing, right? If there's displaced workers, but with the advent of a new way of doing work going mm-hmm. forward, where the work can be done remotely, I think that takes away some of the issues that have previously been, right? Where mm-hmm. you've had people say, okay, I want to have a family. I either have to sacrifice my dreams of having a family for my career, right? Or put my career on hold because I had a family. Mm-hmm. Well, now what we're noticing is, right, and what we're seeing is, you know, men are able to stay at home and realize, wow, I can help. I'm helping out. I like this stuff, right? All those antiquated traditional mm-hmm. means, right? Throw them out the window. But at the same time, if you are shrewd and you're thinking, hey, I want to get the best talent out there regardless, right? Now you can tap into women who have traditionally been sitting there and saying, I'm going to put my career on pause. No, right? Don't worry, right? Mm-hmm. You can mm-hmm. sit there. My yeah. wife is like that. I have a special needs son.
Yeah.
She needs to kind of always stay close to home just in case we get a phone call from school, which happens mm-hmm. often for us, and she has to race to school. So a lot of times, it, you know, I look at it and, wow, if only companies embrace that, mm-hmm. right? Because she's in a lot of stay-at-home mom organizations and stuff mm-hmm. like that, and working mom organizations. Mm-hmm. There's so many talented people that you could tap into. Be creative, right? Mm-hmm. The hackers and the bad guys, so bringing it to cybersecurity, they don't sleep, right? They're 24/7, the yeah. attacks happen. So yeah. if somebody sits there and they have to have an untraditional, a 4-day, 10-hour work week, accommodate yeah. them, right? Yeah. Go after talent and talented people and the best people.
Yeah.
That's my belief. And mm-hmm. that's how I execute and build teams. I go for the best person qualified for the job. I don't see color, race, or mm-hmm. or gender at all. That's the best person. That's the best qualified person. I want them on the team. I want them out there. And go out there and kick butt. That's it. That's how I look at it.
Yeah.
I think if more people did that, you know, the world would be a better place. The workforce would be a better place. But the ones that do embrace that, Christine,
yeah.
are just going to be so far ahead in terms of talent at their organization that it's going to in turn help the organization. And they're just yeah. going to reach new stratospheres of innovation and stuff like that.
Absolutely. Wise advice.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Will, thank you. For being our guest today and sharing your wonderful insights thank in you. The new realities of work. So I'm going to wish you a great day and continue likewise. To be safe. And maybe we'll see you in Orlando when this is beautiful. All over. Thanks,
that'd
Will.
Be great. Thanks.
Christine. Thanks. Bye. Yeah.